Here's a number from overnight. A model sat down with the USA Math Olympiad, this year's set, 2026, and went from 69% to 97% in a single version bump. That's David the Song on the Anthropic subreddit, who scraped more than 100 evals on the new Claude Opus 4.8 to see what actually moved against 4.7. 97% on Olympiad math is the kind of jump that, a year ago, would have been the entire headline. So my first question isn't whether the model is good, it's narrower. When a number moves that far, that fast, what's the first thing you check?
Contamination. The USA Math Olympiad set for 2026. Was it public before the training cutoff? Because the cleanest explanation for a 28-point jump on a named, dated benchmark is that the questions, or close paraphrases of them, ended up in the training data. I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm saying it's the first hypothesis, and the post doesn't rule it out. And the same scrape has the counterweight built right in. David the Song lists the areas that barely moved or got worse: legal reasoning, healthcare, finance, and multilingual. And Vending Bench 2, the Run a Tiny Business simulation, nearly halved.
Halved. So the same release that aces Olympiad math gets noticeably worse at running a pretend vending machine.
And that's the more honest picture of a frontier bump in 2026. One rising number doesn't drag everything up with it. The model got retuned, and the retune helped some distributions and hurt others. The vending bench drop is the one I'd want Anthropic to explain, because that's a long horizon task. Keep your goal straight over many steps, and that's exactly the place these models are supposed to be getting better, not worse.
The official framing, at least as it comes through the AI Daily Brief's write-up, isn't really about the math score at all. The pitch for 4.8 is reliability, better code judgment, more self-correction, and what they call uncertainty flagging. The model telling you when it isn't sure instead of confidently bluffing. The detail that caught me is that it's more willing to critique a proposal without being asked. You hand it a plan, and it pushes back on the plan itself.
Which is useful inside a long agent run, and also the claim I trust least from a benchmark. How do you score pushed back appropriately? And the caveat is right there in the same write-up. It sometimes grounds that critique in assumptions it never verified. So now it's confidently disagreeing instead of confidently agreeing. The sycophancy moved. It didn't leave.
The headline numbers, for what they are modest and real. SWE Bench Pro went from about 64 to 69. Terminal Bench 2.0, the agent in a shell test, from 66 to 74. Humanity's last exam ticked up a few points. Solid, not seismic. But there's a post on the Claude subreddit this week, titled flatly, AI benchmarks are useless, and I think it's the right thing to read next to the eval scrape, not against it.
He's blunt, and he's mostly right. Quote, "This is Goodhart's law playing out completely. The labs tuned everything for the tests, and now we've got these fragile models that break down in production." And then the line I'd underline for any working engineer, quote, "Tweak a few words in the prompt and your results swing 10 to 20 points. That's the whole gap between a leaderboard and your repository. The record score rides on elaborate prompt setups and multi-shot prompts tuned to the eval. You send a normal prompt and a lot of that performance evaporates."
So we have two documents from the same week that don't actually contradict each other. One says Opus 4.8 jumped on math and slipped on business operations. The other says the entire bar chart genre is measuring the harness as much as the model. What I'll do is wait for someone to run 4.8 on a fresh, private task and report back. The number I believe most is the one nobody optimized for. Here's a word the Wall Street Journal put in print this week: token maxing. Bradley Olson's piece, which came across TechMeme, says executives at Uber, Meta, Microsoft, and others are trying to rein in token maxing by their own employees. People burning models spend so fast, it's turned into a real line item on the bill.
And I want to be fair to the employees before anyone calls it waste. Token maxing usually means somebody found that stuffing the whole code base into context or firing off 5 agent attempts and keeping the best one actually produces better work. The incentive is local and rational, better output today. The cost is somebody else's problem a quarter later when finance reads the invoice. That's an unpriced resource being used the way unpriced resources always get used.
And it connects directly to a study that dropped the same day. Zihan Wang, handle WZenus, posted a thread that opens almost rudely with, quote, Claude Opus 4.8 takes you too much tokens. Then it turns into a real piece of research called BAGEN, Budget Aware Agents. They test budget awareness across 4 environments and 5 frontier agents and find structured failures in most of them.
What does budget awareness even mean as a measurable thing? Because that's the part that makes it research instead of a complaint.
Their definition is sharp. Quote, a budget-aware agent doesn't just spend less, but estimates remaining budget mid-task with uncertainty. So the bar is whether the agent, halfway through a job, can tell you roughly how much of its budget is left and how confident it is in that estimate, not just whether it spends less.
And the finding is that mostly they can't. The agent has no proprioception about its own spending. Ask it how much it's burned, and it doesn't really know. That's the uncomfortable pairing with the token maxing story. The enterprise response is going to be the crude lever, a hard token cap, a quota, a rate limit. But a budget-blind agent under a hard cap doesn't plan toward the limit. It runs full speed and dies at the boundary, mid-task, with the work half done.
Which is the worst of both. You paid for the tokens and you didn't get the finished job.
Right. The thing I'd actually want, and what Beijing is gesturing at, is an agent that treats budget like a resource it reasons about, slows down, picks a cheaper path, and tells you it's running low and asks whether to continue. That's a planning capability, not a billing setting, and almost nobody's models have it yet. So the near-term fix is external governors clamping budget-blind agents, and that'll feel exactly as clumsy as it sounds.
There's a post on the Quandary Engineering blog with a deliberately provocative title, MCP is dead, and it hit the front page of Hacker News, 280-odd points. MCP is the Model Context Protocol, the thing Anthropic introduced to let agents reach outside services. The post is part of a recurring genre by now. The protocol's done. Code mode or plain command line tools will eat it.
And there's a real technical argument underneath the headline. The complaint is that MCP as a transport, the actual wire format the model speaks, is clunky, and you could replace it with the agent just calling a command line tool or writing code that hits an API directly. That part's a fair fight. People really are rooting around it.
And then the top comment in the thread is from someone with standing to know. Max Stoiber, handle MXSTBR, opens with, quote, I run the team at OpenAI that's responsible for the ChatGPT App Store, Codex plugins, and all things MCP. His argument is that the transport question is a red herring.
Let me read the core of it, because it's the strongest version. Quote, practically every company on the planet is building an MCP server. I know this because we interact with all of them. Most of these companies don't have a CLI. Many of these companies don't even have an external API. And yet, they're all building MCP servers. That's the move. The value isn't the wire format. It's that MCP became the default thing a company ships to make its service reachable by an agent at all.
And he basically concedes the technical complaint to make that point. Quote, maybe we will turn every MCP server into a CLI under the hood. Maybe we'll use code mode. He's saying the implementation can change completely, and the protocol still won.
Which is a little too clean, so let me add the comment that complicates it. A user named Tannin lays out the actual split. If you're building a connector for yourself or your team, skip MCP. Just hand your teammates a command line tool and some prompts. If you have external users, you need MCP, because that's what Cursor and the other agent apps support out of the box. So DED is context dependent. It's over-engineered for internal tooling, and it's the thing that gets you distribution if you want to be reachable by everyone else's agent.
And MXSTBR is honest enough to undercut himself in a footnote. He says the Codex app's computer and browser use features have made even his own argument weaker, because the agent can just drive a browser instead of needing your API at all.
Which is the thread I'd pull on next. If browser use gets reliable enough, the question stops being MCP or CLI and becomes, why expose an interface at all when the agent can use the same website a human uses? That's further out and less reliable today, but it's the version where the whole protocol debate gets reframed entirely. What I'm watching is whether companies keep standing up MCP servers next quarter or start betting the agent will just click through their existing site.
Let's get concrete and local. There's a write-up on the local LLAMA subreddit from someone running the handle FantasticNature7590,
who spent a few weeks benchmarking multi-token prediction, MTP, on Gemma 4, the 31 billion parameter model, and Qwen 3.6 at 27 billion. The headline result, on Gemma 4, inference jumped from about 40 tokens per second to 132, roughly 3 1/3 times faster, on a single RTX Pro 6000 card.
Quick translation of what multi-token prediction is doing, because it's clever. A small draft model guesses several tokens ahead, and the big model verifies them in one pass instead of generating one token at a time. On Gemma 4, the draft model is tiny, 76 million parameters. And here's the part that matters for trust. The target model still verifies every token before accepting it, so the output path is identical to normal decoding. In principle, the quality shouldn't change at all.
In principle? Did he check?
No. And to his credit, he says so flatly. He calls the quality and the video memory numbers, quote, directional observations, not benchmarked facts. He ran out of time for a proper quality eval. That's the right way to post a benchmark. The architecture says quality should hold because of the verify step, but he isn't claiming he proved it. The other honest caveat, the speedup depends on your stack. VLLM won on Gemma at 132 tokens per second, but Llama.cpp was actually solid on Qwen, around 117. It's not one tool winning everything.
And Llama.cpp had its own small moment this week. Georgi Gerganov posted that it finally has an official website at llama.app. His line was, quote, "Our goal is to make local AI accessible to everyone, with a single-line installer on the landing page."
Which sounds minor and isn't. Llama.cpp has been, for years, a clone the repo and build it project. That's a wall for anyone who isn't already comfortable at a compiler. A real website with a one-line install is the difference between a tool for people who already know it exists and a tool a curious person can actually start on a Saturday.
And one more from the same corner. Antares Salvatore Sanfilippo put his Dwarf Star distributed inference project on GitHub. The pitch is that you can run a 2-bit quantized flash model across two 64-gigabyte machines, or a 4-bit version across two machines with 128 gigabytes each, with pipelining to speed up the prefill.
That's the I don't own one giant machine, I own two medium ones path, and it's a real unlock for home setups. Stitch a couple of consumer boxes together instead of buying a server. Put all of this next to a 0.1 developer in that thread keeps making. Once roughly 1 in 3 teams is running open weights, that's the point where the ecosystem starts building tooling for open models instead of treating them as second class. MTP landing in VLLM and Llama.cpp, a real installer, distributed inference, that's the tooling layer maturing in real time. The thing I'd watch is whether someone runs the MTP quality eval the poster skipped, because the whole speed story rests on the verify step actually holding.
Over in Europe, there are notes from the Mistral AI Now Summit. Koen van Gilst wrote them up, and they hit Hacker News at around 400 points. The detail that jumped out, and Simon Willison flagged the same one, is concrete. BNP Paribas runs Mistral's models on-premises for Know Your Customer checks in Belgium, with the sensitive data staying inside the bank's walls, and Abanca is using agent orchestration on sensitive customer data across 2 million customers in their app.
And then the bear case, which is right there in the same thread and worth saying plainly. A commenter who says they're rooting for Mistral writes that the company has fallen really far behind since the third quarter of 2025. Their words, Mistral's small model has roughly 4 times the parameter count, around 120 billion, and isn't even competing with models a quarter its size. Gemma 4 and Qwen 3.6 own the small tier right now, and they're a fraction of the size.
So there are two readings sitting on top of each other. 1. Mistral isn't winning capability benchmarks. 2. The on-premises, European, regulated industry position is a genuine business that doesn't actually depend on topping a leaderboard.
Both true, and here's the tension between them. If your 120 billion parameter model loses to a 27 billion open model on capability, your on-prem customers can run that smaller open model on-prem too. Data sovereignty isn't something only Mistral can offer. Anyone can run Gemma or Qwen inside the bank's walls. So what Mistral is actually selling is the support contract, the orchestration layer, the compliance paperwork, and someone to call when the Know Your Customer pipeline breaks at 2 in the morning. That's a real moat. It's just a different one than our model is best.
Different corner of the same week, XAI shipped Grok-build-0.1 through their API in public beta. It's the model behind their Grok build command line tool, aimed at agentic coding, and the pricing is the headline, $1 per million tokens of input, $2 per million output.
That price is aggressive. It undercuts most of the frontier coding options by a wide margin. But notice what we don't have. Excels at agentic coding is a vendor sentence with no eval attached, no SWE bench number, no task result, nothing checkable. The cost is the only verified fact in the announcement, and cheap and available does beat good on paper sometimes. That's how a lot of adoption actually happens. But before I tell anyone it's good at coding, I'd want to see it on a real task, not a price tag.
So put them side by side, a coding model that's cheap and unproven, against a French lab with proven customers and underwhelming models. Two different bets on what actually closes a deal. Last one, and it's about the part of AI that runs on actual electricity. Politico reports, via TechMeme, that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, the U.S. energy regulator, is readying a proposal in June to speed up connecting data centers to regional power grids, and AI companies are engaging the regulator directly about it.
This is the constraint nobody puts in a launch video, and it might matter more than any model release this week. The bottleneck on the build-out isn't always money or chips. It's the interconnection queue. You can finance a data center, pour the concrete, install the racks, and still wait years to actually connect to the grid. If FERC shortens that, it's a concrete lever on how fast capacity comes online. A regulator with a June deadline is a real thing.
And on the far other end of the credibility spectrum, there's a thread making the rounds about TerraFab, an account named Lacey Presley posting that Tesla's $119 billion semiconductor foundry in Texas is targeting 1 terawatt of annual AI compute capacity, roughly 50 times current global chip output.
50 times global output is the number that should stop you cold. That's a slogan, not a forecast, and I can't find a primary source for it. This is a hype account, not a Tesla filing, not an earnings call, not a press release. So I'd file the terawatt claim under aspiration, posted as fact, until there's a document with Tesla's name on it. The contrast with the FERC item is the point. One is duller and far more real, because it's a regulator with a deadline. The other is a big round number on social media.
And that's the note to end on, going into Sunday. The capacity story isn't bottlenecked on whether someone hits a terawatt. It's bottlenecked on interconnection queues, permitting, and the slow problem of getting power to the building. What I'll be reading is the actual text of that June FERC proposal when it lands, not the foundry number. The next piece of real signal is in that filing.